begins to understand, okay, look, that's a little too much. If I'm supposed to love everybody like that, you know, that's going to be a problem. So the man asks Jesus, okay, Jesus, I get it. So to love God and my neighbor. Then he asks a question. He said, hey, Jesus, who is my neighbor? In other words, who do I have to love? And Jesus answered by telling him a story. And the story goes like this. He said, one day there was a man and he was traveling on a road between Jericho and Jerusalem. The road between Jericho and Jerusalem is a difficult road. It's a dangerous road. And he said, okay, well, the man was traveling and he got beset by some bandits. The bandits stole all of his stuff, including all of his clothing. They beat him nearly all the way to death and they left him bleeding in the dirt, in the ditch. They left him there for dead, taking all of his stuff, including his clothing, and they left him there. And so imagine a road and there's a man and he's laying there nearly beaten to death. Jesus said, along, luckily, came a priest. That priest was on his way to Jerusalem to carry out his duties at the temple. And when he saw the man, he realized, well, that's going to be a problem. That's going to make me really late for the temple. That's going to make me ceremonially unclean. I can't really touch a bleeding guy. I can't touch a dead guy if he happens to be dead. So the priest said, I'm going to make sure that I don't make eye contact at all if there is eye contact to be made. And so he crossed the street so he could walk on by without having to see what was going on. Next came another man. He was not a priest, but he was an assistant to the priest. He was also on his way to the temple to do his assistant to the priest sort of duties. He was there on the way, and he was a little bit more compassionate than the priest was. He didn't want to cross the street without knowing what was going on. He kind of wanted to see the carnage. Kind of like you gawk at a traffic accident. He said, I want to know what's going on. And so he went across the street. He looked at the man. And he realized this man was in really, really bad shape. And he realized this is way more work than I'm going to be able to do on the way to the temple. I'm even later than that previous priest was. So he says, you know what? I bet somebody else will come along and help him. And on to the temple he went. Next came a third man. You might have heard this story. It may be familiar to you. This man was a Samaritan. Samaritans were actually enemies of Israel. They were half Jews. They were completely different religiously. They were completely different socially. They were very different in a lot of different ways. The Jewish people did not like the Samaritans. The Samaritans did not like the Jews. They were typically the bad guys. They were what you would call an enemy. But as Jesus told the story, he said the third guy, this Samaritan, looked at the man and he had compassion on him. And he had mercy on him. And he had some wine and some olive oil in his bag with him. And he helped the man with his wounds as best he could. He couldn't do much, but he could help with the wounds a little bit, helping to soothe the pain a bit. We're told that he made makeshift bandages. The only thing the man had was his own clothing. And so out of his own clothing, he tore his own clothes to make bandages for the man. He put the man on his donkey. And he traveled to the nearest inn. We rented out a room and put him up for the night and took care of him all night. The next morning, the man was in stable condition and the Samaritan had to get going. And so the Samaritan went to the owner of the inn and he slapped down two big coins. They represented two entire days' wages. And the Samaritan put it down on the table. He said, hey, innkeeper, I need you to take care of that man I brought in last night. He said, this should cover all the expenses, but if it doesn't, I will be back in a few days and I will pay you everything you're out. Now, this is the first time somehow that you've heard this story. You know the ending. You know what the point is. And I have to believe that the lawyer, as he's hearing this, also knew the end of the story. He knew where Jesus was going. He knew what Jesus was stepping in before Jesus even stepped in it. But Jesus is funny. The Bible is funny sometimes because sometimes the Bible, it wants you to say things out loud. It wants you, you know, sometimes God wants you to repeat things to make sure you understand. And so Jesus forced the guy to give his own point. As we read in the book of Luke, as Jesus is telling the story, I think this is super unnecessary, but I think Jesus was trying to make sure this man would never forget this exchange. And so as we read in Luke chapter 10, it should be behind me, here's how this all ends. Jesus said to the man, "Now which of these three would you say was a neighbor to the man who was attacked by bandits?" Jesus asked. The man replied, I think probably a bit sheepishly, "The one who showed him mercy." Then Jesus said, "Yes, now go and do the same." Now I bring this up this morning because the rest of the sermon is going to be talking about people who do virtually everything wrong in Christianity. And I wanted to give us something to stick in our minds of something right. Okay? So before we go any further with what we're going to talk about today, we need to get to the point of what Jesus' ministry was all about. Everything Jesus teaches, everything Jesus taught can be boiled down to this one story. Whether we see somebody who we call friend or acquaintance or stranger or even enemy, Jesus taught us that God, all that God has ever expected from start to finish is for us to treat other people the way we would like to be treated. We are called to love our neighbor, and our neighbor is anyone who needs to be loved. You encounter someone who needs love, that's your neighbor. If you encounter somebody who needs love and you don't want to love them, guess what? Still your neighbor. That's the way this works. The core of Jesus' teaching, the core of everything that Jesus was about, the core of what your Christian faith is supposed to be built on, the foundation of it, is supposed to be that as we love God, we express our love for God in our love for other people. You cannot divorce a love of God from a love of people. It cannot be done. That's Christianity, and that's what Jesus said was life. What's beautiful about this is Jesus didn't just say, do this and you'll have life somewhere down the road. When he talked to this man, he actually said, do this and you will have life. It's present tense. According to Jesus, and again, I'm hitting this hard because it's going to get ugly here in a minute. We have life right now when we love other people. And that life will not end with death. That's Christianity. Good? Good. Now, we've been talking about our roots in the restoration movement the last couple weeks. We've been talking about what kind of church we are, what kind of church Ashland Christian Church is. Yes, we're independent, but yes, we also are part of a religious tradition that goes back a couple hundred years. And as we've talked about the last couple weeks, about 200 years ago, there was a group of outcasts, some guys who'd gotten kicked out of their denomination. Some guys who had asked too many questions. They had asked the wrong types of questions. And they'd had their credentials taken from them. And they decided, you know what? Let's not try to jump through hoops. Let's not worry about the bureaucracy and the politics around churches. Let's just do this on our own. Who says we need a denomination? Who says we need people above us? Who says we need a guy in an office somewhere telling us what we need to teach? Let's just teach the Bible. Let's just be Christians. And let's just let that be that. As we've been talking about the last couple weeks, they had some slogans, okay? One of their slogans we talked about 2 weeks ago was that we are not the only Christians, but that we are Christians only. They believed wholeheartedly that they could hold personal convictions without judging other people. Other people could be totally different from them in a million different ways, but they would not judge those people. They weren't saying our way is the only way. They were simply saying our way is the best understanding we have. Last week, we talked about how they said that they had no creed but Christ. And out of all of these denominational doctrinal sayings, all these things that different churches had said, you have to believe A, B, C, D, E, F, G to be part of our church, our forefathers, the Restoration Movement, 200 years ago said, you know what? I don't want any of that. Let's just say if you believe in Jesus, you can be one of us. Period. That's it. The only creed we will have is Christ. All of this sounds great. All of this sounds beautiful. And I got to tell you, for a couple of decades, it really was. The first generation of leaders, it was as close, in my opinion, it was as close to the New Testament church as has existed in 2,000 years. It's the reason I still want to be part of the Restoration Movement, is what those guys did in the beginning. And now we're going to have to talk about some ugliness. Because it took a generation of leaders. Essentially, the first group of people, they started dying. It happens when you get old. And they started dying off. And that second generation of restoration movement Christians, the second group of people, the sons and the daughters of the original people who had set this whole thing up, well, they may have had their hearts in the right place, but man, were they really, really bad at executing this whole being the Christian church thing. They really got hung up on one saying that we're talking about this morning, and that saying is this. Early on, as well as saying we are Christian, we are not the only Christians, we are Christians only, and as well as saying that we have no creed but Christ, what they said was, where the Bible speaks, we will speak, and where the Bible is silent, we will be silent. Let me say that again, because it becomes important. Where the Bible speaks, we will speak. Where the Bible is silent, we will be silent. The original people who said that, by the way, they said that because they were trying to minimize the stupid arguing. They did not want to argue about things that didn't matter. They said basically, look, if the Bible clearly says it, okay, fine, we'll say it. If the Bible doesn't clearly say it, why are we arguing about it? Let's just leave people alone then. And what they did was they made an admission. It was kind of a subtle admission, but they made an admission that there's a lot of things the Bible doesn't say. So often we try to look to the scriptures and say, okay, well, what do I do in this case in my life? We open the Bible and we look for something. And a lot of times, more times I think than we're willing to comfortably admit, the Bible just doesn't say anything. Or the Bible says something that was to a group of people at a different time, and so we try to make some connections, and it's really hard. But the Bible is very often silent about very important things. And the first generation, they had this saying of, we will speak where the Bible speaks, and we'll be silent where the Bible is silent, and everything went fine. But the second generation, well, they took it in a different direction. There became two different paths in the church, okay? One path interpreted this phrase this way, that if the Bible does not tell us we can do something, we can't do it. In other words, the silence is prohibitive. If there is no thus saith the Lord, we cannot do that thing. That is one way that a lot of people took it. Again, believing that they had interpreted this whole silence thing in the Bible correctly. Another group of people said that's exactly the opposite. The silence of the Bible is the opposite of prohibitive. It allows us for anything. If there is no thus saith the Lord not to do so, we can do it. If God didn't want us to do it, he would have told us no. So one group of people was saying if God wanted us to do something, he would have told us to. The other group of people was saying, well, if God told us not to do a thing, he would have told us not to. And thus we have the roots of our divide. Now, obviously, it's going to become apparent which side we're on here. But what's less important than who's right on that divide is the fact that the second generation of people simply could not get over this. Over and over again, they ran into things in their world and in their lives that this became the crux of the issue. It really began during the Civil War era. Shortly before the Civil War, there was a massive divide within the church about two different topics. Number one was pacifism versus just war. There was a lot of people in the church that believed that we should not fight for any reason. A lot of people in the church that said we absolutely can fight, that became an argument. A second argument in the church, as sad as it is, as much as I do not want to say this out loud, I have to say it because it's history, a big chunk of the church was saying we're allowed to have slaves. And another chunk of the church was saying, well, we can't have slaves. Are you stupid? That became a massive divide. The divide continued over littler things, over smaller things like instrumental music in worship. Some people were saying, well, there's nothing in the Bible that says that we're allowed to use musical instruments as we sing. And other people were saying, there's nothing that says we can't. What are you talking about? There was paid preachers. There were some people saying that, you know, you're not allowed to pay your preacher. The Bible never says pay your preacher. Other people were saying, yeah, but it doesn't tell us we can't. Other people were talking about, there was this thing called biblical inerrancy. One of these days we'll talk about it, not today. But the Bible never anywhere says biblical inerrancy is a thing. But lots of people believed it. So people were saying, well, you have to believe biblical inerrancy because of all of this. But other people were saying, well, it's not this. Over and over and over again, people were arguing these different things, quoting either Bible verses or going back to biblical silence. Over and over and over again, they were fighting. Now, all of those have some base of legitimacy. But if you want to know just how ugly this was, we need to talk about one other issue that I think I can safely, we can all safely agree on, no matter where you are in the church, or else I would think you would be able to agree on it. You see, most of our churches back then were very small. Just like today, most of them were very small, and they didn't have money to, say, send somebody through the, you know, across the plains of America to go plant a new church. They didn't have money to, say, you know, go evangelize on the West Coast or go to other countries. They didn't have enough money to send out missionaries. And so churches decided, you know what, let's pool our money together. Let's all get together and let's have 6, 7, 8 churches put their money together, and together we will send a missionary. Now look, I try to be as objective as I look at history as I can. I can't be objective. There is absolutely, there could not begin to be something wrong with people saying, I want to carry out the Great Commission, so let's send a missionary. There could not be a reasonable argument to be had as to why that's wrong. Other than about half the restoration movement who said, well, I don't see anything in the Bible about pooling our money together. I don't see anywhere in the Bible where we send missionaries with other congregations. And it's at this point that we realize that these people, over about 60 years, they were just fighting to be fighting. They were just arguing because of cultural and political divides. They were just arguing because they looked at the Bible in one way, somebody else looked at the Bible another way, and even when it came to something as simple and obvious as, let's send a missionary somewhere, they could not get along. It is the most ridiculous thing, but yes, you guys were married. You ever been in an argument, and like an hour in, you forgot what you were arguing about? Now, it's at that moment when those of you who are married should stop arguing, but some other one of us, like me, you dig in, and you find a new reason to argue. Because you want to win, is what you want to do. And at this point, who cares about what the original argument was? I just want to win. Imagine that for about 60 years on an entire national denominational scale. It didn't matter what it was. They just wanted to fight. And so in 1906, it became official. One split happened. 13 years later, it became official again. A second split happened. And what was once a group of Christians who said, we want to get through all the nonsense. We want to get through all the noise. We want to get through around all the hoops. All we want to do is worship Jesus together. It matters not if we agree. It matters not if we believe anything other than Christ. Those people, that beautiful vision, it became three churches. The churches of Christ, the disciples of Christ, and us. Now, let's go back to that story with the Good Samaritan. We have called that story the story of the Good Samaritan, and that's great. But that could have an alternate title. And the alternate title could be the parable of the bad priest. It could be the parable of the bad religious people. You see, the Samaritan is the good guy in the story that Jesus told. But you know who the bad guys were? The religious people. And there's a subtle lesson here that Jesus is teaching us, and that lesson is this. It is very possible that your ideas about religion are the exact things that are keeping you from serving God. It is very possible. It is way more possible than we want to admit that our deeply held beliefs and convictions about what we see as these religious ideas that we just can't budge on, that those things, that our religion is what's keeping us from God. In the story Jesus taught, it was the religion of the people, of the priest and the priest's assistant that kept them from serving this guy. And I think if Jesus was to sit down with our forefathers, if he could jump in a time machine and go to 1885 or whatever year, and he could sit down and he could hash out all this, I don't think Jesus would tell them, okay, here's the answer on instrumental music, or here's the answer about slavery, or here's the answer about biblical inerrancy. I don't think he would have done any of that. I think Jesus would have gotten them in a room and he would have told them a story. And at the end of that story, the lesson would have been, you treat other people the way you'd like to be treated, whether you agree with them or not. As religious people, it is humbling to say that it is our religion that can get in the way of us serving God. And our forefathers in the Restoration Movement did exactly that. We have a heritage in a specific church. Ashland Christian Church, we don't always talk about it much because, you know, at a certain point, you know, it becomes somewhat irrelevant, but we've never shied away from the fact that we are a Restoration Movement church. But that means we have roots. We have a heritage in something that is deeply broken and deeply flawed. And so that leaves us with a choice as a church. What are we going to be? Is Ashland Christian Church going to be the sort of church that was that second generation? Where we're going to argue and argue and argue to death until we are right, even if we split the church up over it? Or will we be that first generation who said, you know what? Where the Bible speaks, we will speak. Where the Bible is silent, we will be silent. And if well-meaning Christians are able to come to the table with different opinions about something, guess what? There's a good chance there's a whole lot of silence there we're not talking about. And we need to remember that we are not the only Christians, but we are Christians only. And that we have no creed but Christ. And instead of blowing up over political stuff or religious ideas, instead of any of that, we say, you know what? I may fundamentally disagree with the people next to me. I may look at the scriptures very differently than they do. But the Samaritan did not agree with the man who was laying bloody on the side of the road. In fact, Jesus said it was a Jewish man, which means that the religious agreement was between the priest who walked by and the man who was bloody. The good guy is the guy who didn't agree with him in Jesus' story. At Ashland Christian Church, we are going to be a church that prioritizes the most important thing. And I know that sounds obvious. But it's been 150 years now since we had any sense of unity within our movement. And it's not always that obvious. This morning we're in our third week of our series called Christians Only. And as we talk about our Restoration Movement roots, and we talk about some things that, quite frankly, are a bit on the depressing side, we talk about how we as human beings can blow everything up over nonsense. Our third lesson, it's very simple. Anyone in need of mercy or compassion is the neighbor Jesus wants us to love. Anyone in need of mercy or compassion is the neighbor Jesus wants us to love. We began this morning with a clip from a movie called Bat Kid Begins. True thing that happened. You probably saw it on social media a while ago, that documentary. I could have shown about 8 different clips from it. Could have shown the whole movie. It's amazing. Essentially, there's this kid who had leukemia. He survives leukemia. He goes to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and he decides he wants to be Batman for a day. And literally hundreds of thousands of people came together to make this happen. People donated their time. People donated materials. People donated money. People spent long hours making the suits and training the kid and getting the family there. They shut down a city. San Francisco, they literally shut down the whole downtown. They shut down the city. The San Francisco Giants gave their entire stadium over to them. The chief of police called in every off-duty cop, and every off-duty cop worked for free that day. To make sure one little kid could have a good day. From around the world, millions of people were tweeting and sharing from all over the place. And for one moment, there were no religious lines. There were no political lines. Everyone just agreed, cancer is bad. Kids are good. Let's do something about that. And it sounds so simple. And it seems so beautiful. And in our world, it is so incredibly rare. Guys, we need to learn the lesson from the Bat Kid. There are people in this congregation who, on a deep, fundamental level, disagree with you. And that's okay. There are people in the church at large that, on a very fundamental, deep level, disagree with you. And that's okay. Because one day Jesus told a story about three different people, two of which did the wrong thing and failed, one of which did the right thing and succeeded, and the failures were the ones who agreed. The failures were the religious people. And you and I have to get to a place where our commitment to our religion, whatever those religious ideas might be, is not stronger than our commitment to love other people. Because in Jesus' mind, there was absolutely no divorcing loving God and loving other people. You couldn't do it. You could say you loved God, but if you didn't love other people, you were a liar. Our church is part of a movement that has been very bad at that. We split up over the dumbest stuff. Really. And as a theologian, as a student of history, it just breaks my heart to see what could have been and what's not. I got to tell you, though, we can't change the past, but we can change the future. And so at Ashland Christian Church, we can decide, let's be that first generation. Let's agree that when we disagree, that we are not the only Christians, but that we're Christians only. Let's agree that we really need no creed but Christ. And let's agree that where the Bible is silent on an issue, let's just move on. Where the Bible speaks, we'll speak. Where the Bible is silent, let's be silent. And let's be like the people who got together and said, we can agree that cancer is bad and that kids are good and we should do something about that. We can agree that Jesus is the Son of God, that we should be sharing the good news, and let's do that. I can't speak for other churches, but I can speak for this one. And at Ashland Christian Church, we're going to do that. So when the musicians are going to come forward, they're going to sing a song. Yeah. We hadn't talked about what song until right now, because we are organized at Ashland Christian Church. We have this invitation. The invitation is to take Jesus up on his offer. The Bible teaches, to the best that we can understand it, that when somebody wants to become a Christian, that they are to repent and be baptized. They turn their backs on who they used to be. They say, I want to do things God's way. And there's a symbol, there's baptism in that. We go down in the water. It's like our old selves being put to death, out of the water, new selves born again. You guys have all heard that. And you guys have all heard the part about the joining the church and all that. It's snowy outside. We have no visitors. Okay. Today, let's make a decision. That thing that's making half of you guys cry with the bat kid, I mean, that can be every day for us. If we can just say, you know what, I'm going to prioritize the most important thing. I'm not going to let nonsense get in the way. I'm not going to let my disagreements over religion, which, by the way, we all have. I'm not going to let that get in the way of loving other people. That's a decision you can make. That's a decision we as a church are hoping to make every day. That's an invitation we have this morning. As we stand and as we sing.